And it's about 8:30 right now, and it's time for BitWizards Tip of the Wand. And we have in the studio with us Vincent Mayfield. And Sam, what's your last name?
My last name is Blows. Oh,
that's right. I apologize. You told me that. Now, what do you apologize for?
just
because. All right.
Here in the U.S., I get made fun of that. In England, it wasn't such a big deal, but here in the U.S.
There's probably a couple of words that, never mind, we'll go there, we'll forget that. So, kind of curious, you guys been looking at the Super Bowl, and who would you pick? Who would you pick?
So, I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs, and the reason why is Heather Ruiz, who's the chair.
You told me that. That's
and
right.
So, Heather, that's her
You
team.
Don't really care. You're going with whoever she's looking
well,
at.
Well, and I also like the underdog. They haven't been there in about 50 years, and I saw a post on the internet the other day, so it must be true that, President Trump is doing something right, because after 50 years, the Chiefs are actually making it to the Super Bowl.
Well, that's one good thing he could be blamed for. How about that?
Wait, I guess so.
It depends on which side. What about you, Sam? Who are you going for?
Well, I worry more about the Super Bowl party than the Super Bowl itself. I'm looking for selection of bacon-wrapped different types of foods is what I'm really looking for in a good Super Bowl party.
One party, they're doing bacon-wrapped shrimp. Now, that just sounds
really
pretty good. And I've heard the bacon-wrapped scallops are excellent as well.
Bacon-wrapped scallops are fantastic.
Yep. Love that stuff. All right, so we'll see what happens. Yeah. Next time you come in, we'll have the winner.
Absolutely.
So we'll find out.
As long as it's bacon, we're all winning, I think.
Yeah, as long as it's bacon, Sam, don't care. Was there bacon involved? Good. I'm glad they won.
BitWizards, Bits and Bytes.
What you got, Vince?
Well, hot off the presses from eWeek, they pose a question out there that says, will your business disrupt or will it be disrupted? And it ties into a term that you'll hear out there that you'll hear some folks talking about called digital transformation. And it may sound like a buzzword, but, you know, the drivers behind that are very real. And it's really speaking to the fact that we're in an era where technology is reshaping business and industries and companies. And companies that harness that technology can reap big advantages and big rewards over those that don't. In fact, if you kind of look at it, there's a called the creative destructive cycle. In 1965, the average tenure of companies on the S&P 500 was 33 years. And in 1990, it's 20 years, and it's forecasted to shrink to 14 years by 2026. If the forecast churn rate holds true, 50% of S&P 500 will be replaced over the next 10 years. So businesses can't, afford to not pay attention to technology and technology changes. We kind of live in a microcosm in this area where we tend to adopt things really, really late after the trends already started.
Right.
And so I wanted to do this segment here to kind of encourage the small businesses out there, because technology can be a huge differentiator in your business. And instead of kind of putting those horse blinders on and saying, you know, we've always done it this way, I'm trying to encourage people to think a little bit more innovatively, to apply technology in the business, look at new business models and things that are going to help them grow.
Yeah, because it looks like to me there's going to be a lot of businesses that are going to fall off of that S&P. And if you're not the tip of the wand, if you will, then you're going to probably drop to the wayside. And the ones that are staying technologically advanced are probably going to continue on, because their business is going to thrive.
Yep. Absolutely.
I think technology's always played a part. We think of it as now like, oh, the web and all new technology, but it's always been a part of driving business forward. Piggly Wiggly was at the turn of the century, had come up with this new idea of what if instead of people walking into the store and talking to the guy behind the counter and saying, I want a bag of flour and I want a bag of sugar and I need some bread, what if they were able to walk up and down and see the food themselves, grab it themselves and take it with them? And it was a revolutionary idea. And yet today, less than 100 years later, we can't imagine a world where you wouldn't be picking out your own food.
Right.
And that birthed the advent of marketing and advertising, because all of a sudden people were picking which food they wanted. It wasn't what the grocery store owner, which kind of flour he wanted to buy and give them. Instead, there were options. And so people started advertising their bag of flour with cooler marketing slogans and fun advertising campaigns. And so for the last 100 years or more, we've had this technology driving the change. And we look back just a few years later and think, well, how could we have ever done it any other way different? But looking forward, it's so easy to become a little bit of a curmudgeon and say, well, it's always worked fine the way it is. I don't need to change anything. But as Vince is pointing out here, you don't necessarily have to change, but other people in your market, in your competitors are already thinking along those lines and thinking, what can we do to harness what's coming down the pipe right now? What can we do to advance what we're doing and reach our people better where they are and to let them know that we understand what they're doing and what they're looking for, and we can provide that as a service.
Well, and it's accelerating too, which is part of the issue. Technology kind of, has moved along, and it's kind of got that hockey puck, that logarithmic scale mm-hmm. in the way that it's going. So change is coming at us faster and faster.
Oh, it is faster. And to your point with the grocery stores, now you look at the grocery stores that you can get online, and you can order your food and then go to the store, and they will bring
Absolutely.
It out to you. So there's more technology for the grocery stores that aren't doing that, just as an example.
Absolutely.
They're going to be falling behind because the people have busy lives. And if they can do it online, order their food, have them drive up, they put it in your car, and you move on. Instead of going out picking up your own food, like we're talking about, those grocery stores that don't do that
right.
are probably going to be falling behind for the people that are very busy and they want that service.
Absolutely. And one of the things that's a statistic that's out there is that younger SMBs or small and medium businesses are embracing technology and change faster than other or older SMBs. Those companies that do that are spending about 1.4 times more than other companies are, and they're forecasted to have much more revenue growth than companies that don't adapt and that don't move forward. So the younger, there's more entrance into the market. A new person that starts a business now, first of all, it's easier to start a business now.
Mm-hmm.
There's more resources and information and things like that. And as soon mm-hmm. as they do, they're adopting technology. So they're disrupting other companies that have probably been established in there and blowing them away. And, they're putting other companies out of business.
That was my question to you was, do you find basically in your business mm-hmm. that some of the older businesses, maybe because they're older people that own the older businesses, are less, they might be a little bit more resistant to change than a new person coming up is grown up with technology and they start the business and they're already advanced more than the people that have been in business for a while?
Well, let me just put it this way. I actually have people that have told me that this internet thing is still a fad.
Oh, no.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or that will say that social media doesn't matter, or that they don't need technology, or all they need is a placeholder page for the web, that none of those things matter. And, those are the companies that are going to be out of business.
They're one of the ones, your S&Ps are going to be dropping off if they're not keeping up with the other ones.
Yes, SMB, small and medium business.
Oh, I meant the S&P
500.
I meant the S&P 500.
Oh, the S&P, yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
The big companies.
The big companies.
Yeah.
But, the mandate's clear. Businesses can't afford to be complacent about technology in these changing market conditions. And, one of the things that we do at BitWizards is we work with our clients to make judicious choices about technology, when it comes to when and how to invest. Again, we don't want technology for just technology's sake, but, we want technology to meet a business purpose. Technology is a strategic competitive enabler. So as part of that, we have a virtual CIO services, which is part of our managed IT service. And so we kind of treat, small business IT like you might do big business, where we do annual and quarterly planning, and we help them plan that IT investment strategically to enable them to remain agile and competitive in their market.
So they don't have to have an IT in-house?
Right.
You guys take care of that for them.
That's
Absolutely.
Great. Or we can augment their IT in-house. Mm-hmm. We do that all the
yeah.
time and help them out and give them a little bit more breadth and depth than, one guy or your second cousin twice removed who knows a little bit about IT and helps you out on
And
Saturday.
The nice thing about, we talked about this before, you have your employees and each one of them is like a specialist in certain
yep.
areas. So if you got one IT guy at your business, they
yep.
can always call on you about whoever the specialist is and get some information from that specialist.
Right.
Absolutely.
And we make sure that the team stays on top of the new current trends in technology, because with our IT services, it's not just helping people fix their computers or drag their Outlook icon back out of the recycle bin because they accidentally dragged in there. More of it is being able to sit down with business owners and talk to them about where they're trying to go as a business, what they want to achieve, and how we can look at current trends in technology and see how we can help them get to where they're going using the technology they already have available to them. Oftentimes, technology they already own and aren't aware that they already have been paying for this and they have all of these features available to them that they could be utilizing to enhance their business and they haven't even been aware of it. So that's where we step in as that virtual CIO, the chief information officer. We sit down and say, what can we do to help you use what you already have or use technology to further your business?
Sure, because you don't know what you don't know, right?
Right.
And that's why you guys are the tip of the wand.
Bit Wizards, what's up our sleeve?
What's up our sleeve today? So today we wanted to talk, you know, since we're, you know, we've been talking about disrupting, we want to talk a little bit about maintaining legacy systems. So, you know, sustainable change requires three traits: flexibility, agility, and scalability, all which are indispensable to the growth of a business. And so we run into customers all the time that basically have this one machine that's from the late 1990s, that they're running this piece of software that they say they can't do without. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're asking us to hold it together with baling wire and duct tape. And mm-hmm. You know, there's a huge cost. We call that another term, which I'll try to make you guys familiar with, is called technical debt. Mm-hmm. And technical debt is when you have a really old system and you continue to let it sit there and fester, and you've got to maintain it, and the technology on it gets outdated, and you can't find, you know, the patches, the security patches and things like that are necessary to keep it up to date. And you get to a point, especially in larger systems, where the cost to replace that system is very difficult. You've got training costs. You don't have people that understand or know that technology because the technology is so dated, so it makes it even harder to change. You've got customizations in the way that you've operated in your processes and your business that, you know, are going to require systemic change in order to adopt something new. And training. What people don't realize is that if you get one new piece of technology in there, whether it be, and usually software is a big one, it's going to change how you operate in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I would imagine that not only software, if you let it get old like that, maybe your machines aren't going to be able to run that software. So you're going to be looking at more expense to get the machines that will run the software or update the machines if it's possible.
Yes. And it's important to not compare apples to oranges. So you might think, well, I've had this truck for my business, and I've had this since 2000, and it's going just fine. I've got 250,000 miles on it, and it still works like a champ. But that doesn't mean that the computer and the software that you also bought in 2000 has aged as well as that truck has. I worked at a radio station in a previous life, and some of our soundboards still had Bakelite knobs on them, right, before the advent of plastic. But you know what? They still worked because the microphone was the same principle, the soundboard was kind of the same deal. But the problem was the software we had running it was written in Pascal, I think it was, and the developer was this old retired guy from Dayton, Ohio, and we had to fly him down about once a year to come do maintenance on the system because it was so old, and he was the only person who knew how to do anything with it because he had written it back in the day, but long before there was Windows, long before there was networking or internet or anything like that. So the only way to work on it was to fly him into town and have him come work on all of our computers individually to update this software. And while the soundboard may have been just fine because it was still doing the same job, the software was absolutely not, and it was hindering any kind of progress or growth.
Oh my gosh.
And that's the key there. Old doesn't necessarily mean it needs to be replaced. The real issue is the system holding the company back, or is it becoming too costly to run? And then the third caveat there that I would say is that, you know, is it patched? Is it secure? Is it up to date? Those are the three things that you've got to weigh when you decide whether to replace one of these things. You know, the adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, it just doesn't work in the realm of technology.
Because it rapidly is broke, right?
Yeah.
Well, after not
it's
long.
It's so outdated that everybody's going to pass you by, you know, with your business.
Well, not only that, but, you know, that people don't realize the risk that they're at. You know, we were just talking about a customer that we've got the other day. They've asked us to repair a machine similar to what we talked about. They've got what's called a RAID array. It's a bunch of different drives in there. And the whole idea is you've got little mini backups within that. But if the way the thing is set up and configured, and it's been that way all along, if it fails, now they're in deep trouble. I can't recover what they've got there. And by a miracle, a couple times our techs have been able to go in and fix what we've got. Mm-hmm. We keep telling them, you need to replace this. You need to spend the money to get rid of this. We should be moving you to the cloud, or we should be buying you a new system. And oh, I don't want to spend the money, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, but once it completely goes out, they'll wish they did it.
Well, and that's the case, is that once there's a problem, all of a sudden they want to call us up and they want us to drop everything to fix it because it is mission critical.
Right.
And at some point, you know, we're just going to have to force the hand and say, look, guys, you know, we're your trusted advisor. We've told you twice before you can do this. At some point, this is going to reach where we can't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be in deep trouble.
Once it's a critical loss, then what do you do?
Yeah, I think it's probably I see it more often than not is this misunderstanding, this idea that well, it's working, so I'm just going to kind of leave it as it is, and I know I'm supposed to invest in this every year and pay for the latest version or pay for the updates and the upgrades, but you know what, I've gotten away with it for a while and everything seems to be working fine, and then 5 years later or 3 years later or 10 years later, whenever it is, when it actually does fail and it becomes time, now we've got to either repair it or replace it, it often ends up being more expensive than if they had just kind of kept up with it along the way. We were working with a manufacturing company up in Alabama, like a manufacturing plant, and their software required that they pay for a support contract every year so that whether they need it or not, they have support available to them. And they said, you know what, we never call them, so we're just going to stop paying it. And then after about 5 years, they had a problem, and they called them up, and the company said, well, we would love to help you, but we need this support contract in place, and unfortunately, you can't just pick it up when you need it. You have to back pay the $18,000 you already owe us for being out of violation of the support that you're supposed to have for this software. Once you've paid your $18,000 tab, then we can sit down and have a conversation about why it's broken and why you've been misusing it and why you haven't been keeping it up to date.
And oh, the other option was, or you could buy the new, that you could buy the software again from scratch, and that was going to run them about $180,000, and then they'd still end up in the instance where they had to fix what they already had in order to get the data out of that system. So it's a very short-sighted way of thinking,
right?
And there's a lot of distrust when it comes to technology. Everybody thinks it's smoke and mirrors and some wizard in the corner waving a magic wand. It's really not. It's engineering. There's a discipline to it. There's real thought, which is why we try to, you know, take large business practices and bring them to small businesses.
Yeah, so you can keep your business running. It just makes sense, though, especially when your business relies on computers so much, and who doesn't anymore, mm-hmm. with all your information and all the different things that you might do within your business, not to keep your main engine, like in your car.
Right.
Why not keep that oiled and up to date and, you know, change the spark plugs like you would in the car and change the oil,
right.
and upgrade anything that might be need to be upgraded. You just keep it running right rather than just let it fail and eventually it goes out and then you're done.
Yep.
And then you got to kind of figure out how you're going to get your information back, and how many times does that work and how many times doesn't it work?
Absolutely. In fact, unfortunately, they go hand in hand, that the people who are not interested in investing in maintaining their systems and keeping them up to date and paying what needs to be paid are also the same people who think, well, why am I going to spend all this money for a backup or for a redundant system if we never hardly use it but once every 5 years? And so those two go hand in hand, and unfortunately, it's the same mentality that causes one that causes the other. And unfortunately, it's also the thing that gets people into trouble when they need to refer back to a backup or a redundant system or to fail over to a different solution because the first one failed. Often there is nothing there in place ready to go, and it leaves you dead in the water, which can be pretty expensive even by the hour.
Well, and then they don't factor in the other costs there, which are, you know, the lost business, the time, the strain, the stress. All those things that go along with it. You know, I once knew a company that had this huge database. It was entirely built for their entire mail order management system. And they were running it on a terrible old computer, and they were running on dated Microsoft Access technology from the mid-90s. And every night they would compress and compact this database. And they were having a secretary come in the morning at 3:30, 4 o'clock to do this compress and compact and kick it off so that it would be ready when their phone call people would come in to take orders in the morning, because if this thing was down, they would lose it. Well, they let their backups go, and then once their backups went, they didn't have a backup of the database. The system crashed, and it was outdated from the technology, and they lost millions of dollars of orders. I don't even know why somebody would do that. I mean, in my mind, you know, that's something that, you know, that you would have taken care of and you should have taken care of. It's like just kind of turning on the blinders. You know, one of the things that we try to tell people is that now every company is a technology company.
Absolutely.
It is permeated in everything that we do now. Somebody that owns a small yoga or training business is relying on technology these days, sure. Whether it be to advertise for their business or maybe to do their accounting or finances, or maybe make it so that their customers can do bookings. You know, at some point you've got technology, you're going to be, sure. Utilizing it in some way. You know, we don't think twice about going out and paying $1,000 for an iPhone. Mm-hmm. Most people don't these days. They're running out. We got a lot of power on here. And, and they rush out and they get the new one every time one comes out, right? But when we start to talk about things like their computer systems and backups and things like that, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, and they don't really care.
Right? Sure. I've been using this 486 for the last 25 years, and that thing's working great. Why should I replace it?
It's got a button on the front that says turbo. It must be fast.
The best ever. Hey, good advice, guys. I think people ought to listen to you because you seem to know what you're talking about.
Bit Wizards from the spell book.
So today's term that we're talking about in the from the spellbook section, we often define one of those geek speak terms that you may see around and about. And this one you'll actually a lot of times see on contracts for software or for services, specifically what we call SaaS applications, software as a service, where instead of buying a piece of software that you're going to download and install on your computer or install on the server and then give everybody, instead you subscribe to a service and you get to it through a website. And so, a good example of that is our Bamboo HR software we use at BitWizards. All of our HR stuff that we do, whether we got to submit PTO requests, all of that, we just do it on a website now instead of having to have a special piece of software for this. So whenever you're signing up for one of these software as a service solutions, one of the concerns is, well, if I don't control it, how do I know it's going to be there when I need it? And so the SaaS technology, the software as a service, uses this terminology called uptime and downtime SLAs. That's your service level agreement. They are committing to you and promising to you that they will have their service available to you for a certain amount of time out of the year. Now, you might get a notice every now and then that will pop up and say, at 2 a.m., we're going to go down for some scheduled maintenance.
Right.
But for the most part, they want to guarantee you that their service will be online. And we actually use an interesting numbering system to keep track of that uptime.
Yeah, and you'll hear people talk about 5 nines of reality, which that spoken term is like 99.9999, right? And count the nines. And so what does that really mean? It's also applied often when you talk about where people have hosted websites or hosted infrastructure, that type of thing. And what they're really talking about is what's called high availability. It's the characteristic of a system to ensure that there's a level of performance and uptime is higher than what is a normal period, right? So we all know that every system isn't up all the time. So when we're talking about 99.999% uptime, what we're really talking about here is that that you've basically only 5.26 minutes of downtime in an entire year, right? That is almost unheard of. There's very few systems that are 5 nines. So we'll have people call us up and say, I need a system that's 5 nines. And I'm kind of like, yeah, that's, unless it's a national security system or something like that, that's pretty highly unlikely. But, 1 9, 2 nines, or 9.5, or, 3 nines, that's sometimes those are doable and those are typical, and it's really rated by service.
And you pay for the more nines, and the number goes up more. So if you want this service to be available to you 99.9999999% of the time, the only way the company can guarantee that is by having not just one server providing what you're expecting, but 2 or 3 or 100 or 500 servers. So Google Services, for instance, runs on thousands of servers all the time to ensure that if one of those goes down, nobody even sees a blip on their radar. The other servers are picking up the workload with it. And so that's where that high availability comes into it. But of course, now you have to pay for the service to manage and maintain all of those. A good example of this for us is Office 365. A lot of people talk to us and say, well, I don't really trust Microsoft to do do that. I would much rather go to Best Buy, buy Office off the shelf, and I'll install it on all of my company's computers, and that way I know it's going to be there when we need it. But the truth is, actually, it more than likely won't. There will probably be some issues. Or people say, I don't trust the security in the cloud. I'd much rather have this in my comm closet where we also store the sodas for the vending machine. Instead of looking where Office 365 guarantees you four nines of SLA. So that means that they promise that their service will be available to you 99.99% of the time, which is less than an hour of downtime a year. So from January 1st through December 31st, you can count that cumulatively you'll have less than an hour of it being unavailable to you.
And most likely that'll be at night when you're not even working.
That's absolutely right. And it's not probably one solid block of an hour. It's probably a minute or two here, a minute or two there, where you're going, wow, why didn't this work? And then it refreshes. Oh, it's back again.
Yeah.
It was down for a couple of seconds. And over the entire course of the year, less than an hour of downtime. That's a pretty high guarantee. But Microsoft can make that because they do have servers and data centers all over the world to support this.
Wow, that's just great service. Where else can you get that kind of service? Seriously.
At BitWizards.
Okay. At BitWizards, 99.99.
Well, at BitWizards, we have an SLA, a service level agreement, not for our uptime, but for our availability, which is really what the SLA is. But if someone is one of our managed IT services clients and they have an issue, we guarantee them that within four business hours, we will have responded, personally reached out to them, and started working on the problem that they have an issue with on their computer. And a lot of people come to us because they say, well, we have our IT guy, and it's my wife's cousin's brother's nephew twice removed, and he usually comes over and works on our systems, but right now he's grounded and his mom won't let him out of the house. And so that's not a great response system. Whereas with BitWizards, we say, if you call us, we guarantee you we will be back in touch with you within just a few hours. That is guaranteed. And in honesty, Jennifer and I were looking at the numbers. We're actually under 15 minutes actual across the board. Our average for being able to respond to somebody is probably under 10 for us to be able to pick up the phone, talk to somebody and say, I heard you got a problem. I found out about it. Let's investigate this and fix it for you.
The nice thing is you guys can do that remotely, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And in some cases, we're actually proactive, where we actually tell customers about problems before they even know that they have them. I had somebody call me the other day and say, hey, I wanted to tell you that your team just did an outstanding job. We had a problem with our internet connection. It happened in the night. They were monitoring it. They called me before I even got into work to say, hey, I've already called Cox. I'm working on it. We've got this taken care of for you. So, we monitor all of your systems in real time. We're watching out to make sure that you're protected and make sure that your systems are secure and make sure that they're up and ready to go for you when you come into work in the morning. That's not to say that things don't go wrong, but when something does go wrong, we're there for you to hold you up and make sure that it's taken care of.
Stuff happens, though. All right. You guys want to give a plug to one of your clients?
Absolutely. I'd like to give a big BitWizards thank you and a shout out to our customer, Kindness Pet Hospital. Kindness Pet Hospital is located out on 30A in Santa Rosa Beach, actually both ends of 30A. They have two locations. And Dr. Mary Connor, Dr. Kristen Carr and their staff take care of our furry and not so furry family pets. And while puppy breath is often cute, Kindness Pet Hospital also has a veterinary dental practice to take care of that hound halitosis in your life, which my wife's dog definitely needs. Their forward-thinking, fast-paced, rapidly expanding veterinary clinic has embraced technology as a strategic enabler. Thank you for choosing BitWizards to provide managed IT services for Kindness Pet Hospital. And thank you to the whole hardworking team there for allowing BitWizards to serve you. We love working with Kindness Pet Hospital.
Oh, this sounds good. Now, I always got my dog's teeth cleaned because, oh, my gosh, like you're talking
so
about.
So bad.
Oh, that dogatosis was bad news. Don't lick me anywhere.
That's right.
You know what's scary is there are humans that need that same service.
You've seen them. You need to go over to the vet clinic.
That's right.
You look bad. You don't bite me.
You can see my dentist, Dr. Poole. He takes good care of me.
I can see your teeth look awful clean, Vince. Yes. He's taking care of your teeth. We love that.
It's those dog chews we found. Man, they do such a good job on
the
my
greenies.
Teeth. I love them.
It's the rawhides.
You got to love that. All right, guys. Well, I guess we'll be back again next week on Tuesday at 8:30 again. Thanks for coming in, BitWizards. We got Vince and we got Sam. We appreciate you guys coming in to the tip of the wand. Like I said, we'll be back again next Tuesday. You guys have a great week.